addressing the central issues. The Wall Street Journal, citing people with knowledge of the previous rounds of negotiations, said that the offer made by China so far, whether they are increasing purchases of U.S. products or the gradual opening of the financial services sector, had failed to solve Washington's demands for deeper structural changes. The main demand of the U.S., which was set out in a statement issued on May 4th, is that China cease its attempt to develop its technological and industrial base under its Made in China 2025 plan. In language similar to that directed against North Korea and its nuclear program, it has demanded that China take immediate verifiable steps to ensure the cessation of Chinese government-conducted, sponsored, or tolerated measures targeting U.S. trade secrets and technology. It also insisted that China take no action, either by means of retaliation or action in the WTO, against U.S. tariffs imposed against it. The response in the U.S. to the latest trade war measures, both in political and business circles, has not been to oppose the trade war against China as such, especially the issue of technology development is regarded as a threat both to the economic and ultimately military dominance of the U.S. However, there is criticism of Trump that his tactics are misplaced. By targeting potential allies, above all in Europe, with tariffs on steel and aluminum and the threatened tariffs on auto products, he is making impossible an alliance against China. Republican Senate Finance Committee Chairman Orrin Hatch said he opposed the proposed new measures. "Although I have supported the administration's targeted efforts to combat China's technology transfer regime, tonight's announcement appears to be reckless and is not a targeted approach," he said. In fact, Hatch indicated that he wants more severe measures. Quote, "We cannot turn a blind eye to China's mercantilist trade practices, but this action falls short of a strategy that will give the administration negotiating leverage with China while maintaining the long-term health and prosperity of the American economy." This is also the view of wide sections of the Democratic Party, which want increased action against China, but warn that Trump's actions are alienating U.S. allies. Sections of business have warned that the trade war measures will impact on the U.S. economy. David French, a senior official at the National Retail Federation, told the Financial Times that they could boomerang back and hit consumers and workers. "The prices of everyday products would rise, and the retaliation that will follow will destroy thousands of U.S. jobs and hurt farmers, local businesses, and entire communities." The U.S. Federal Reserve is also concerned, noting at its June meeting that it had received reports that some businesses were putting investments on hold or reducing them because of fears over the repercussions of the trade conflict. However, the Trump administration has brushed aside such concerns and is pressing ahead not only against China, but also against the European Union, which Trump has declared to be as bad as China, only smaller. Having refused to give the EU a carve-out from the tariffs on steel and aluminum, the U.S. has begun an investigation into auto imports to determine if increased tariffs should be imposed on the grounds of national security. The latest measures against China could well have been a warning shot across the bow of the EU and a signal that the U.S. will brook no opposition. Before the latest anti-China announcement, German Chancellor Angela Merkel and Chinese Premier Li Keqiang held a meeting in Berlin in which they pledged to uphold the rules-based order. The meeting ended in an event hosted by Merkel at which the German chemical company BASF signed a preliminary accord to spend up to $10 billion on a second complex in China. In what amounted to a rebuttal of Trump, Merkel said, "This shows that China's market opening in these areas isn't just talk, but action." Li said that, combined with Chinese moves to open up to foreign finance companies, the deal was a signal that multilateralism plays a strengthening, bolstering role for the world economy. Merkel said she was concerned about the expansion of U.S. tariffs against EU exports. "We should try to reach a deal, otherwise we will be forced to take action," she stated, and expressed the hope that China and Germany won't get caught up in a global spiral of protectionism. The Wall Street Journal cited an unnamed U.S. official who said Trump values the relationship we have with European allies and has made clear the importance of working together with Europe on unfair Chinese trade practices. The article noted that U.S. industry officials had said the new tariff threats against China were bound to be seen as a signal to Europe that the U.S. wouldn't back away from the trade fight, and also could be a specific warning to Merkel. The EU and China will hold an economic summit meeting in Beijing next week, with reports suggesting that China is pressing the EU to issue a strong statement against Trump's trade policies. You can find all this and more today on the World Socialist website. This has been David Brown with the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.
I want to let you know about something that needs to happen real soon. You got to save Free Radio. Yes, we need a new studio. We need it to be economical. It doesn't have to be a big place. It could be a small room. We'd like to have access to a bathroom. If the whole thing is clean and dry and has electricity, that's a real plus for us. Somewhere between the West Side and 41st Avenue, maybe part of your garage, or we could put a shack in your backyard. We'll consider pretty much any solution you can come up with. We're 20 years old. We're a community-supported pirate radio station. We've received official recognition 3 different times for our public service over the last 20 years, and we're offering a $300 reward to anyone who will get us a studio that we can use for at least a year. So send that email to frsc@freakradio.org. That's frsc@freakradio.org, or you could send mail to FRSC PO Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California 95061.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it is the July 12th, 2018 edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. 2 fun hours of listening to me ramble on, as well as attempt to interview a few folks about what's going on around homeless civil rights in Santa Cruz, elsewhere, and also just local politics, stuff that I find of interest. So don't go away. Hoping to give you some insight and some good news into the, it's actually a call to action in the wake of good news, the reopening of the San Lorenzo Park, but not the Loudon Nelson bathrooms in the city of Santa Cruz. That happened on Monday, according to locals who were very pleased to be able to use them there. But the Loudon Nelson bathrooms, according to activist Brent Adams of the Santa Cruz Bathroom Task Force Facebook page, are still closed except to the special clientele that are okayed by the Loudon Nelson Center. More about that and other things if you stay with me.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And welcome to another edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Again, as I mentioned in the intro, on Monday, the Parks and Rec Department apparently opened the San Lorenzo bathrooms for the first time in nearly a year. I don't actually have the exact date. I asked City Manager Martin Bernal about that a couple weeks ago at his meeting with the Conscience in Action activists, of which I'm one. And I couldn't get much of a—well, he didn't know. He said he couldn't remember, but he would look into it. And apparently either he looked into it or someone else did. It's not too clear. He did say a lot of the decisions were in the hands of his subordinates, immediate subordinate Carol Skurich, interim director of the Parks and Rec, with Mauro Garcia gone, apparently. And also, he said, it depended on the park workers. I frankly was rather skeptical of this answer, but it's really hard to tell without actually seeing the interdepartmental memos, which may not even exist. They may have done all this by phone or mouth-to-mouth conversations, the decision to reopen the San Lorenzo bathrooms. But all we know is that in the week that followed our conversations with Bernal in early July, we heard nothing except that through the grapevine that Bernal had gone on vacation along with the shitty council, as I like to call the Santa Cruz City Council, which in theory bears ultimate responsibility for this. While Martin Bernal is in fact the city manager, most highly paid and most powerful person in the city as far as city government goes, it's also true that the shitty council can, by a votes, rein him in and or even replace him. Imagine that. What a concept. By the way, I want to really clarify for probably the nth time, I have nothing against Martin Bernal as an individual. He seems a relatively mellow guy. I think he's horrible in terms of how he's treated homeless people and homeless activists and addressed those issues. Really repressive measures over the last few years, specifically against the freedom sleepers and the survival sleepers, ranging from Klieg lights and new rules that criminalize people for lying on the grass, the removal of all the grass from City Hall, phony charges that must have been okayed by him at some level, at least not challenged, which essentially drove away people from the sleep out at City Hall, even though they weren't engaging in criminal behavior in the sense that they had no legal place to go. No place was being provided for them, and wasn't for several months later until Andy Mills decided he couldn't take the sight of people at the post office and decided to have them suggest in a strong voice or routed them over to San Lorenzo Park. Anyway, Bernal is he's an amiable fellow. He had a long conversation with all of us two Fridays ago, I guess it was. He wouldn't meet with us as a group with protesters out front because there was a lot of anger. And also his subordinates were closing not just the San Lorenzo bathrooms, which they had done for a year and now reopened, thank goodness, or thank activists, I would say, and thank the community for demanding it. But the City Hall bathrooms, which that's where we had our protest. One of them, the women's bathroom, as I've mentioned in past broadcasts, what was open the day of our protest, which was a Thursday, I guess 2 weeks ago. And we then requested that the men's bathroom be opened at least during the duration of the protest so we'd have someplace to go other than squat and go on the grounds. And the response of Bonnie Bush, the city administrator, and Anna Brooks, the woman behind the counter, was essentially to, one, give us a list of bathrooms elsewhere in the city, one of which was across the street in the library, but that was, it was not clear whether it was available, and I think it was under repair, under cleaning or something. I wasn't clear on that. But they closed the women's bathroom as well, so both bathrooms were closed. So Bernal's behavior is really the focus of my criticism. And I have to say, insofar as he didn't object to the reopening of the San Lorenzo bathrooms, maybe he even initiated it, you know, that would seem to be something I think he's being given credit for online if you go to Santa Cruz Indy Media, which is the Indie Bay website, you'll see an article there which, let me take a look. It was posted by some anonymous conscience and action activist, either Phil Posner or Steve Plaich, I suspect. But they give him credit, I think, or at least they give city officials and the park officials credit. Let's take a look and see what the actual wording of this is. I often post on Santa Cruz Indie Media, as regular listeners well know, and I encourage you to take a peek there if you want to see my latest ramblings, my latest thoughts on things, some issues anyway. And yeah, here it is. Conscience in Action meeting with city manager yields surprising result. Conscience in Action. And I'm not really clear, and this article isn't clear either, if there really is a direct connection. You would think there would be between the city manager and the reopening of the bathrooms, and then therefore the meeting nearly 2 weeks ago with the city manager. And I don't know. It's hard to tell. I guess I could send him a direct email and ask him, and I probably will do that just to get a specific response. But I think he may be, as I said, away for the duration, or at least for a while. So that's the good news, and it is good news, although the bathrooms are not open the entire day. They're only open, or at least on Monday, they were only open until 6 o'clock, and the park closes at sunset, which I think is 7 or 8, thereabouts. I arrived around 7, and the bathrooms were locked, but there was a couple nearby that told me that a ranger had told them that they would be reopening at 8 in the morning, so it wasn't a one-time thing or some kind of fluke that Brent Adams, who does this Santa Cruz Bathroom Task Force, found the bathrooms open and was quite surprised. He also, however, found, and this is the point that I'm making in a story I'm about to post on Santa Cruz Indie Media, that the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms, which are certainly perhaps as important as the San Lorenzo bathrooms, are next to another park, admittedly a much smaller one, but also a community center used by seniors, used by the community generally. And I'm thinking in that area of Santa Cruz, within a 4 or 5 block range, I guess the metro is open when they're not being cleaned, or the metro is closed. There is it's a number of blocks away, and for someone who's either disabled, elderly, carrying a big backpack, it's a burden to try to find a bathroom. And to find yourself excluded from the bathroom under their new pretext that you have to be a part of a program, although I keep wondering, does that mean you just have to say you're part of a program? And don't they post the programs? You can simply walk in and say, oh, I'm here for which program? Oh, that one there, you know. That would be one way to do it. It's still the main reason that we began this recent push to give a shit, so to speak, which was the name of the campaign led by Zav and Pat Colby about a year ago as part of a Huff push. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, to reopen the bathrooms at City Hall and elsewhere. And they're still closed at City Hall, and they're still closed at least unless you can get past the gatekeepers with their key, their digital key, at the Loudoun Nelson Center. So to further investigate this, to sample community opinion, who knows, maybe to actually document their process of excluding people, some of us Huffsters will be there next Tuesday at the Loudoun Nelson Center at 1:30 tabling, and I guess we'll be around. The plan is to be on the park side, I believe, though if you don't find us there, look for us on the Center Street side. That might be another possibility. We intend to distribute petitions encouraging people to express their opinion, hopefully to support reopening of the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms, and also to essentially find out what the policies are in practice of the officials who are running this, maybe to ask the officials directly what specific incidents have led to the closing of the bathrooms for the last few months and the subsequent flight of the ACLU, which is not meeting there anymore because they feel this is discriminatory behavior, which it is, obviously, toward homeless people, along with other actions by city authorities. Or apparently, it's hard to say whether they're being pressure directed or simply doing the directing and pressuring of the Loudoun Nelson staff with the fence around the park and with the new don't leave your unattended property and with the increased security patrols and harassment that I've had reported to me. You'll be hearing some interviews. I'm not sure if this week's interviews from the Red Church, which I picked up a few days ago in my usual grab them in line as they're about to eat and see what's been going on, if they want to talk. And I'll be passing those on. Anyway, it's 1:30 on Tuesday, July 17th. Come on down. If you want more information before that date, give me a call on the HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And I will tell you anything new that I know. You can also listen to these broadcasts. I want to apologize, by the way, for not having the, and I shouldn't be apologizing, but at least mention and regret, I guess that's the proper word, for not having the most recent shows posted where they have generally been posted under the HUFF website, huffsantacruz.org. A number of folks can't really find the time or the radio or the computer access to get to a show at the times that the shows are actually broadcast. They're not broadcast live. They're canned the day or hours before. In this case, today, it's a few hours before the show actually is put up. But you have been able in the past to simply go to the huffsantacruz.org website and look under the name Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides, the name of the show, and go to the subheading Lost Shows, and you'll be able to find the latest show usually within a day of its broadcast. This has not been the case for the last week or two because we've been in trouble with computer problems that hopefully they're going to be resolved. I keep hearing that's likely to happen, or it's already happened, but it hasn't happened yet. So don't give up hope. Keep checking there. Also, you may find some of the shows under Latest Shows, as distinguished from Lost Shows. Lost Shows had been a much more secure place to go. Latest Shows, at least for the Thursday show, this show, I believe in previous Thursday shows, they do get posted there. Unfortunately, the Sunday shows, the longer shows, don't get posted. Instead, some gobbledygook, some other period of information, music, some other shows get on there. We haven't been able to correct that, and who knows if we ever will be able to correct that. That'd be nice if we could. And again, while I'm at it, if you're interested in assisting Free Radio and getting some assistance yourself, I think we're still offering a $300 reward. I could be behind the times on this because our budget is getting very thin and really our survival situation is getting more desperate. Our one engineer is ill and can't do the kind of work he used to do as much as he has. We have gotten a few new broadcasters, but not really enough to pay for rent for a new place for any extensive amount of time. I'm not sure what the current financial situation is. I think we're able to go on for a few more months, but we need, we need money. But we also, the thing that we keep asking for and that people haven't yet been able to assist us with, and we haven't been able to assist ourselves with adequately, though we've looked at a few places, is studio space. And that's going to be the often recited 10x10 space with access to electricity, internet, bathroom, hopefully somewhere in the Santa Cruz area, but not too far afield from Santa Cruz. part of our problem, of course, is the gentrification of the town, the huge rise in rents. In spite of some rent control, we still are in the midst of profiteering central here in Santa Cruz. And the demographic of the town has changed. Not the kinds of people who are here, maybe they don't really give a shit about free radio. Or maybe they can't give a shit because they're too busy struggling with the two, three, or four jobs that they're doing to maintain their own survival subsistence in Santa Cruz. But enough of this gloomy talk. Just a reminder, if you have updates, if you have questions, if you are interested, you can contact us at Free Radio Santa Cruz at the freakradio.org website. That's freakradio, one word, freakradio, small letters, .org, where we have schedules and information and application forms, because we're looking for new broadcasters. It's not very expensive to be a part of Free Radio. It's like, you know, 10, 20, 30 bucks a month, something like that, depending on, to some extent, how much you can pay. And you can also give me updates, and actually I will then try to pass them on the air at my phone number, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And now I will take a breather, and you get to hear a bit of music.
I am a leader, but you will not follow me. I ain't no preacher, for I'm full of blasphemy. See you in hell, boys. See you in hell, boys. Hey! Been dancing with some devils. I'm a bad girl with a hope for a better day. My laughter is spiced with mischief. I won't toss salt, kiss it up, or pray. When you offer pink or blue, I'll take the blackest. When you offer only two, I'll offer three. When you point me in a direction, I'll run backwards. And at the border of utopia, I'll touch to anarchy. Cause fire and rock, I'm coming home to you. Well, I'm picking the bones out of my dinner stew. Open up the gates of hell and roll me through. Fire and rock, I'm coming home to you. I am a leader, but you will not follow me. I ain't no preacher, for I'm full of blasphemy. See you in hell, boys. See you in hell, boys. Hey! So you're saying Satan's army's rising up soon? Well, if it is, I'm the secretary of no state. Got wrenches, rocks, and bottles in my tool pouch. My desire is society's jailbait. Cause there's tons of guys I'm open about the workday. Dimes by the dozens, their song weighs 1,000 pounds. But there's nothing like a lady with a buzzsaw. I just might build your house, but I just might tear it down. Cause fire and rock, I'm coming home to see you. Well, I'm picking the bones out of my dinner stew. Open up the gates of hell and roll me through. Fire and rock, I'm coming home to you. I am a leader, but you will not follow me. I ain't no preacher, for I'm full of blasphemy. See you in hell, boys. See you in hell, boys. Yes, barkeeper. Recruit your rebel children. There ain't no use in locking doors. There's one of me in every home. With mud on my boots and blood on my jeans, I'll take those pretty dresses, tear them at the seams, roll me through the gates of hell. Ah, please, and I'll be back in your daughter's dreams. I am a leader, but you will not follow me.
I ain't no preacher, for I'm full of blasphemy.
See you in hell, boys. See you in hell. See you in hell, boys. See you in hell. See you in hell, boys.
And that's Roll Me Through the Gates of Hell with Mischief Brew, which I think I played some time ago, but it's been a while since I have. So there it was again. So I'm looking at today's Sent Anal. That's the Sentinel, for those who know it. I often go to the opinion page, look for letters, and see what they're doing there. Not terribly enlightening, usually, but a couple things. There's a letter. It's kind of an unusual twist on the anti-rent control gang's approach. We need shelters, not rent control for the homeless. This is by Janet Newman. I don't know who she is, from Soquel. Rent control will not work for the homeless. Didn't work in San Francisco, where the homeless population has increased tremendously since rent control. Only a better social safety net with wraparound health care for all will alleviate the homeless problem. And actually, people need housing, and housing access depends on affordable rents, and so I think she's mistaken. But this attempt to connect her sympathy for dealing with a homeless problem and her opposition to rent control is kind of a new one to me, so I thought it was interesting. She also notes, instead of $1 million rent board to go between landlords and tenants, Santa Cruz needs more shelters and services to help each individual get back to her life back on track. And actually, shelter and services don't really help that much. It's important to have them as an emergency measure, but you really need someplace people can go lodge, you know, lodge without being arrested for illegal lodging under 647E, the illegal lodging law used to crush protests in Santa Cruz, still used against people who are setting up tents on the sidewalk elsewhere in town where there is no place to go except for the lucky few who can get into the Boneyard barbed wire campground. Nasty looking on the outside, concentration camp like, in a way, and actually is in a way, but inside certainly nicer than previous shelter situations for those who get there, unless, of course, you have to deal with the summer heat in tents, which might not be such a pleasant experience. I haven't talked to the folks there. Maybe I'll do a little interview today. I'll see if I can get a hold of activist, no, that's not the right word to call him, worker, Joyful Heart, also known as Swami, the Dharma Blanket Man. You may remember him from downtown from some years ago, back from his travels and trials, and employed now at the River Street Campground, or Boneyard Central, as I've called it, which will continue to be open until the end of August, according to the latest words from Susie O'Hara, the boss of the campground, and Martine Bernal, her boss. And here's another letter, again, from today's Sent Anal. New requirements for testing of cannabis will eliminate toxins and enable accurate dosage, but there seem to be unintended consequences. I don't know how unintended. There were not enough labs to test stock in time to meet the July 1st deadline, so now shelves are empty and patients are deprived of medication they've come to rely on. An estimated $90 million worth of product that does not meet the new criteria will have to be destroyed. A hit to the economy, a waste of natural resources. To remain solvent, mom-and-pop operations may revert to black market sales. And it goes on to criticize the State Bureau of Cannabis Control with a disastrous deadline to have everything go through these non-existent or overburdened labs. I think it's by July, starting in July 1st, which means you have to dump all the rest of your stock. It's by Stefan Bianchi of Santa Cruz. Again, what isn't mentioned, of course, are the local ordinances that are cracking down on marijuana cultivation, taxing it, limiting its distribution, banning its smoking inside even businesses that are specifically medicinal marijuana or recreational marijuana places, as is allowed in some places in San Francisco, but not in Reefer Madness, Santa Cruz. You know, oh, no, no, not Reefer Madness. This is the center of liberalism, right? No, wrong. And it's really important for us to understand, if it's to become, again, a leader in sanity, we need to stop pretending about what's really going on. There is a letter that is from actually a writer who I often agree with, Denise Ehrlich of Aptos. Police shouldn't target homeless people. She writes, I disagree that we need to take a tougher stance, strictly targeting people who are homeless. It's immoral to target one class of or race of people for any crime and not equitably enforce the laws. Whether the law is sitting on a wall, loitering, making noise in a park, or sleeping, tickets and citations should be written equitably or not at all. I applaud shifts in the use of policing and especially misuse of the jail when it is ineffective, expensive, and does not result in any long-term solution. Ah, but if we have a final solution to the homeless problem, as some people apply to overseas, to other groups, would that be better? I don't think so. This is, unfortunately, there's a liberal tone to it that I don't like. But there's also, I mean, I can't disagree with what she's saying as far as it goes. As frustrating as thefts are, we'd be fooling ourselves, Denise continues, if we ignored the fact that people from all housing and employment status are capable of stealing from businesses, sometimes even from one's own employers. Well, there's a weakness here because it's true that people outside who are homeless, and I don't know if it's actually the case in Santa Cruz, but it's plausibly the case that people who need to eat, who need food, who need shelter, who get treated like shit by law enforcement officials and businesses downtown and right-wing neighbors and neighborhood associations don't have a lot of respect for the property and privileges of those folks necessarily. May have less, let's put it that way. And it's understandable that they would, although there's also the opposite kind of Stockholm syndrome thing, where you have people who are taking on the beliefs and mindset of their oppressors. So some homeless folks say, gee, if only I worked harder to clean up the streets, if only I were more obedient, if only, then I would be treated like a human being again. And unfortunately, as I've said again and again on this program, that's not the way bigotry, prejudice, and the class war works, as far as I've seen. You need power. You need the power of people coming together. Yes, you can appeal to conscience, and that's what some of us will continue to do, I among them. But you also need power, and that is that's been the basis of unions coming together. It's been the basis of women's power. It's been the basis of black liberation. It's the basis of countries overthrowing colonial rule. So, yeah, you know, it's all, and you can, the power can take different forms. It can be nonviolent. It can be violent. It can be through a diversity of tactics. There are all kinds of ways that it can happen. But you need it. And if you don't got it, you can be as nice as pie, and it's not going to make any difference. Because the people who are in power, they want to keep their power. And they see it as a norm worth what they're doing. You Negroes have always kept in your side of the tracks. You know, I mean, it's not, we're not asking anything new. You know, come on. You homeless people, you know, all you got to do is go somewhere where you can afford to live. I don't know, Tijuana, Bakersfield, Fresno, you know, someplace else. These kinds of arguments they sound perfectly normal and natural to people who are in a privileged situation, or even people who are not so privileged but are desperately trying to hang on to what they have and don't see that they're likely to end up under the boot sooner rather than later. And there's also a long article, which I don't really feel too qualified to critique, a long commentary by Robert J. Samuelson of the Washington Post, one of the establishment economists, I would assume, who is trying to understand why aren't wages rising. And he doesn't look at, for example, I don't know, the busting of the unions. He doesn't look at the passing of legislation and the court decisions that are crushing the unions. He doesn't look at the massive income inequality that is growing. None of these things have something to do with why wages aren't growing, with the flight of foreign capital to other countries where cheaper or even slave labor, slave is a strong word, but very, very much cheaper labor can be used to make profits for free-ranging capital that can roll here and there. Instead, he creates these, or he claims to find, the reason why wages aren't rising is there's slack in the labor markets, more slack, because people who have given up looking for work are re-entering the job market. And more than 5 million people say they'd like a job, but they aren't counted in the labor market because they're looking. And so that's, I'm not quite sure why that would be indicating why wages aren't rising, but he says the second reason is the aging of American society distorts the reported wage changes. As well-paid baby boomer workers retire, they're being replaced by younger and not-so-well-paid workers, even though their wages may be rising. So actually they're rising, but they're not being paid as much as the people who are retiring. You see, that's, it's all understandable. Things aren't really that bad. Just, you know, go along with it. Third thing he suggests is employers are competing for workers using levers other than wages, better fringe benefits, signing bonuses, laxer overall standards in hiring. And these have economic value, so you don't need to boost the wages. So they have value. So don't. What are you complaining about these wages for? Come on. Fourth thing he suggests is some employers refrain from cutting wages during the worst of the recession, but now they have to do it to offset the higher costs of their businesses. And finally, it's really misinterpreting economic data. The employment rate, the share of the population with a job as opposed to the unemployment rate, wages are really growing at a pace you would expect. So it's really statistics, that some kind of misleading statistics. You know, I don't know what the wage situation is in Santa Cruz, so as I said, I'm no expert. I just tend to get very cynical when I see these paid hirelings of the, you have to call it the, it's not just the capitalist press, it's the corporate capitalist press. It's the sort of the mantra that's, it's sort of, it's Trumpism, but it's the same Trumpism that the Democratic Party is funded by. And that's the very reason we have somebody like Trump, who he is able to rely on the anger of essentially disaffected people and disaffected wage earners, who are people who are unemployed, people who are, you know, have been losing their previous jobs and so forth, people who don't believe either Democratic or Republican rhetoric, because Trump overcame all the Republican establishment as well. You got to remember, if you're going to fight Trump, you have to fight the fundamental Trumpism that he represents, which is there long before he came, and it's going to be there when he's gone too. The thing about him is he's sort of outspoken as a sort of a corporate boss who's quite confident in his own power. He doesn't give a shit what he says, and that not only feels refreshing, it is refreshing to some people. Instead of pretending that you're some kind of liberal or pretending that you're making conservative moves in the economy, you actually just you rage and rant as you wish, and you say things that establishment figures don't like you to say, whether they're FBIers or CIAers or congressional leaders or who knows, even corporate bosses. But you do it mainly to maintain your power, as a demagogue does with the segment of the population, a part of it that elected you. And the issue of how much you mean it, it's never really clear. I mean, you look at Trump raging in Europe against NATO. He isn't really raging against NATO. He's raging against the fact that the U.S. has to fund NATO, or has been funding this armed military alliance against Russia, which is, you know, frankly, is a threat of a nuclear exchange, given this increased ramping up of U.S. bases all around Russia. If you can imagine it, what if Russia started putting bases in Mexico? They tried it in Cuba, and they got, we almost had World War III. The same thing is, the same kind of dynamic, I think, is operating here. But in any case, I don't see much anti-war opposition. There is, you know, Hiroshima Day and Nagasaki Day are coming up. We're going to have the usual brief peace marches at the town clock. But I don't know that the kind of mass direct action that's needed to encourage people. And see, Trump encourages his right-wing base with the kind of tweeting and raging that he does. But you don't find anybody on the other side doing that except calling for more Democratic Party victories. And, of course, the Democratic Party victories don't mean anything if they're doing the same thing that Trump's doing, only doing it light. They don't get to the disaffected huge section of the population that no longer wants either Clinton or Trump, the Democrats or the Republicans, who have a stranglehold on the political system. But I'm going to look for a little music so I can rest my voice, and who knows, maybe rest your mind.
You make love dandy, you make swell molasses candy. But honey, are you making any money? That's all I want to know. You make fun and you could make trouble. You make mistakes, say that goes double. But honey, are you making any money? That's all I want to know. You make dates and you make trains. I can get that through my head. It's a pinch in a pinch, you could make breakfast, even make the bed. You make good when you make a promise. No, I'm not a doubting Thomas. But honey, are you making any money? That's all I want to know.
In case you're wondering, that was Are You Making Any Money from, I think it's a 30s film, Moonlight and Pretzels. Never heard of it. Probably never hear of it again, but you heard it here. So let's see if we can catch what's going on up in Berkeley Way. You remember a conversation we had last Sunday with Amber Whitson. Didn't catch her last name at the broadcast last time, but it is mentioned in this story. Berkeley rousts marina vehicle dwellers on the BerkeleyDailyPlanet.com website, a place I go occasionally to catch the liberal view of things going on in Berkeley. The story is as follows. Responding to repeated health and safety complaints, the city of Berkeley has evicted about 35 homeless people who are living in RVs and vans in the parking lot of the recently closed HS Lordships restaurant in the Berkeley Marina, a spokesman for the city said today. And again, you got to be really cautious about this kind of stuff because it sounds like it's being presented as news. Repeated health and safety complaints. Until you get to the end of the sentence, it's a spokesman for the city said today. And, of course, you want to look for the documentation always because often in order to clear the way for redevelopment activity or to please different commercial interests or to respond to the apprehensions, real or imagined, of some neighbors, you get a few complaints cooked up into magnified so that they become the basis for criminalizing people in an area and getting them to move away when they have no place to move to. Continuing this story, city spokesman Mathai Chacko, may have him wrong, sorry about that, Chacko, said the city responded to the encampment at 199 Seawall Drive after families who use the nearby adventure playground and the management of the nearby Doubletree Hotel complained about assaults, drug needles, and defecation in the area surrounding the encampment. Always a, a good lead if you want to smear people as dirty, criminal, filthy, talk about assaults, drug needles, and defecation. Just don't get too specific about actually how much there is of that compared with elsewhere in the city, let's say, and over what period of time, and so forth. But the people who lived at the encampment told reporters at a news conference in front of Berkeley City Hall that they had lived there peacefully and lawfully and kept the area as clean as possible. Amber Whitson said, "We clean up the trash at HS Lordships, and we care about the water there." Whitson said, "People living in vehicles is a reality across the country as the economy gets worse." Whitson said, "We want a piece of land where we can live, park safely, and have running water." Isidro Prado, a former student at the University of California at Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism who lived at the site, said, "People already are living in vehicles throughout the Bay Area. People aren't going anywhere." Whitson said people who are living in vehicles at 199 Seawall Drive have now moved back to a nearby site on Marina Boulevard where they had lived before. But Chaco said, "That's not okay, that's not acceptable, and police have warned people not to live there." Berkeley Mayor Jesse Arguin, a supposed liberal, that's my inclusion, my addition, told reporters at an impromptu briefing in his office that he had supported a proposal that would have allowed the people to stay at HS Lordship site while the city developed a plan to create a vehicle park, a vehicle dweller park for homeless people at another location in the city. But Arguin said the proposal was defeated at a meeting last week, and he doesn't think there are currently enough votes to get that plan approved at the time. Councilmember Chris Worthington voted against it. Quite surprising to me. Worthington in the past was a liberal. Could have done. He's taken the Scott Kennedy journey from liberalism to repression, which happened pretty quickly for Scott Kennedy after he joined the Santa Cruz City Council back in 1990, I think, is when he became a part. He was elected then. And Arguin was elected mayor, I guess, in 2016 and immediately backed away from controlling the renegade right-wing city manager of this, whose name I don't exactly know at this point. Arguin said that on any given night there are more than 1,000 homeless people in Berkeley, and he believes we'll take a regional effort, sounds like Rochelle Noroyan, our local don't do anything for the homeless, but do it to them, a councilwoman who wanted to ban RVs in the area. Take a regional effort, Arguin said, that includes officials from Alameda County and other cities to solve the problem. Arguin said the Berkeley City Council will vote on Tuesday night. That apparently was last Tuesday night, on placing a $135 million affordable housing bond measure on the November ballot. And he's also proposing an $8 million real estate transfer tax to pay for services for homeless people. And, of course, we're not really talking about the need for money. We're talking about the need to essentially defend people who are taking care of themselves, allow them to take care of themselves. That's something that Arguin ducks, apparently. Chaco said the city shelters 350 homeless people every night and recently opened a navigation center, navigating them where, of course, always a question, for 45 homeless people. You may remember Mike Zint last show, if you've listened to him, from the First They Came for the Homeless political movement encampment, said the our navigation centers have nowhere to navigate people to. It's essentially kind of a nice respite for people for a few months and then before they get dumped back out on the streets. Arguin said two of the people have already found permanent housing, and he believes three additional people will get permanent housing in the next week. That's from the city shelters of the 350 homeless people every night in the navigation center of 45. Over what period of time? Well, it's like the same question when you see the big sign, 700 people got housing from the homeless lack of services center in Santa Cruz. The question which Linda LeMaster, or Lighthouse Linda, as she calls herself now, says is that's over what period of time and out of how many people who aren't getting housing and out of how much that's been spent. Chaco said the city's plans, it could be Chaco, it could be Chaco, I don't know, city's plan for helping homeless people gives priority to those most in need, such as people who haven't had housing for more than a year and people who suffer from a disability. Or that always sounds real nice to say. I have no idea if that's the case in Berkeley or not, but I think I'll give a call to activist Carol Denny and see if I can, tease out some more truths, see what we got here. She, I caught her earlier on the email, and maybe we can catch her while she's still around. We have a ring. All we need now is a Carol.
Hello?
Carol Denny.
Oh, hey.
You are on the air, so watch out.
Okay.
So I'm calling you because I just read the article in the Berkeley Daily Planet quoting, is it Chaco or Chucko?
Chaco.
And Arguin, the city Führer. And then
you're ahead of me. I haven't read it. What does it say?
Oh, it's nothing particular. I mean, it has Amber Whitson. And that's, I know, I talked to Amber, actually.
One of the RV people.
Yeah, Ben, very eloquent spokesperson, too. Berkeley rousts marina vehicle dwellers. It's essentially Arguin saying they don't have the votes at city council to let them stay at HS Lordship's parking lot or whatever, but they moved back there anyway, or they moved back to another spot they were at and told not to be at. And actually, I was going to call Amber and get an update from her, too, but I thought you might be a good person to talk to about Berkeley issues generally. Am I right?
I'm glad to say what I can, although my understanding of where they were last was just at the side of the access road from the overpass to the area at the end of the marina area where his lordship's is. So they've moved out of that parking lot that apparently people were claiming was an issue. And now they're just by the side of the road, which I gotta say, I don't know who's gonna be bothered out there.
I think Carol, that it's 199 Seawall Drive, I think, is where they were, and then they've moved. I'm looking at the story here, back to Marina Boulevard.
So there, I guess the last thing I saw was a little tiny blip on a local news station that said they had essentially moved back where they had started.
Right.
But behind these barriers, they put up these, well, the city put up these big concrete barriers, supposedly to stop large vehicles from being able to utilize the space. But they just figured out how to park sideways.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, you yourself, you are luckily indoors, or at the moment anyway.
Yeah.
And you're not too far away from the marina, right? You can bike on down there, right?
No, it's terrific. They're in a really, I think they're in a really elegant spot where they're, you know, close enough to water and so forth, close enough to bathrooms that if the city didn't have its head you know where, they could just open up the bathrooms that are part of the marina, which, now down there are a lot of people who live on boats, so there are bathrooms surrounding the harbor that they keep locked or give, I'm not sure how it works, or give special keys to the marina the boat residents that they could easily share with the people who are in RVs. This looks like the easiest thing to solve on Earth to me. But you would have to have the guts to turn to the business proprietors down there and just say, hey, these are your neighbors, deal with it.
Yeah, you know, I'm just wondering, when I was living years ago up in, you know, on Marin County, one of the issues up there were the anchor outs that were being driven away by the gentrified folks who wanted to, you know, didn't want the lower class hanging around and, you know, disturbing the tourists or whatever.
That fight is not over, yeah.
Yeah, oh no, ongoing. But I'm wondering, is there any chance of an alliance between, I don't know if you got anchor outs in the Berkeley Marina, but
we
probably...
We have people who live out there.
Yeah. I mean, is there much... I've often thought, you know, what about an alliance between the renters and people who are outside, similarly with anchor outs? And I'm usually told by activists...
It's like if you... At least the people that I've talked to from the RV group say that, you know, all it... The thing is, in Berkeley, you can have a lot of support from a business community, from people like me who rent in town, from... You know, the anchor out people, from parks people, but what Jesse, our new mayor, Jesse Ottaguin, I guess he's not that new anymore, a year and a half in, Jesse Ottaguin, our mayor, will say, it's complaint driven. And there's no parameter to the complaint. Like, is it one complaint? Is it 50 complaints? Or does it matter who complains? You know, it's something that they protect because they don't, they supposedly don't want people having a backlash against the voice. But the voices are pretty obvious in the press. It's usually a business voice. So I don't think there's the system they have right now is you can have a whole community of people, including business groups like the Friends of Adeline, who are completely supportive of an encampment, and then they'll take, if they decide they want to go for it and scrape a whole group of people off the face of the earth, they'll just go for it on the basis of there being inevitably one complaint. And I don't think there's anything right or fair about that, given the many, many, many civil rights laws that govern human rights from a refugee standpoint. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, we have to start thinking about people as economic refugees.
Let me ask you, Carol, there was this Tuesday city council meeting. I think, did you get to it? Do you have any news about what happened there?
I was not there, and an enormous amount of people. I just spent yesterday with one of them, Barbara Brust, who has a van. She tries to track down the harder to find people in town who need food and help and so forth. And then she takes the rest of the food. She's sort of a conduit of fresh and hot food to people who need it. And she was very eloquent. I only caught her speech to the council before. I caught about three people's speeches to the council, and the RV people were eloquent and profound. They are a really connected, cooperative group of people. So it's a very familiar story to me. You know, it's almost like the city of Berkeley says, well, if you guys can really cooperate and be sympathetic, then we'll let you stay, until they won't.
Mm-hmm.
And when they say it's complaint-driven, that complaint can come from anybody.
Yeah, same thing here.
The manager who goes like, oh, well, you know.
We have the same thing here in Santa Cruz. But I'm wondering regarding this. Well, you used to have one of the few council members I would ever talk to when I would come to Berkeley was our old buddy Chris Worthington, who seems to be taking a different tack. Any thoughts about that?
I have the same question about him. I have not heard what I should have heard by now, a ringing campaign kickoff announcement. And I have asked his staff members what's going on, but of course you can't ask that. They have to separate their work as council people from their campaign. So it's actually an inappropriate question to ask in that context. But I was hoping to hear from him. I've left several calls from him. I was hoping to hear from him by now. I know he was sick for a while, and I don't know if he's going to even run for city council. He has a lot of competition, but the competition he has so far is, pathetic. And, one of them showed up at the city council on Tuesday on, I think, this issue, and just made an ass of himself, obviously knowing very little about the city and how it works. So there's always people like that want to run in every district, and the more of them you have, the more likely people are to just say, well, you know, Chris may not be my cup of tea, but at least he knows his way to the office.
It seems to be, though, that according to when I spoke to Amber last week at the previous city council meeting, which I guess was an emergency meeting or something.
Right. They gave them a few days extra.
Right, but he was the one who essentially voted down a longer stay.
He voted down a longer stay, and the thing is there is an uneasy legal intersection between the emergency ordinance declaring that we have a housing crisis, blah, blah, and then an allowance for, in this case, a very specific group. And I think part of, if I remember right, or this may be completely wrong, but the impression I got at the time was that Chris was concerned that Berkeley was making an allowance for one specific group that was not applied generally throughout the town. And so it was a justice or fairness objection. And I do understand that. I do think it is long past time for the city of Berkeley to have rolled back all of its anti-homeless laws to allow people to sleep in their vehicles as simply a public safety measure.
Has Chris actually proposed that recently?
No, we don't have the votes. There's no point in proposing anything like that right now. The votes on the council they're terrible. It's basically Chris Worthington and Cheryl Davila and nobody else.
Well, but he could have had the votes to help the RVers for the next month, but he chose to say no.
No, wait. There are two different votes. The vote a week ago, they did have the votes to extend the stay of the RV dwellers, but he did not vote for it to illustrate the principle he objected to in that successful vote. And he's done that several times, and all it is a no vote that will not disrupt the opportunity for the RV dwellers to have a few more days to, what, get themselves together before the inevitable move, but to also take a stand for a principle which I recognize is important, which is, no, you can't just give a right to these people that you deny to these other people over here. There's a whole organized community right under the overpass here that when I played for the city of Berkeley's 4th of July marina celebration, and when I was walking down there, I walked through their campground, and I'm waving hello, and they have a big, beautiful barbecue, and they're all, like, sweeping up and getting ready for the sun to go down and for them to enjoy their own more private celebration. And I thought, you know, this is beautiful. This is an organized group. This is really, you know, this is the kind of group that Chris thought should be included in a recognition, the same kind of recognition. I don't know if you're understanding what I'm saying. I think I do,
but, you know, it comes to mind a phrase that I don't usually stand by, which is that the perfect is the enemy of the good, you know, and to suggest that he couldn't have extended this group for a month as they requested.
No, you're misunderstanding again. That extension was successful. It was a successful vote.
For a week, not for a month.
But that's okay. They had the votes for a week extension. I think it was a week. They had the votes for a week extension. He voted against it so that he could illustrate that they should be doing more, which is about all he can do, is show people that he is a brave man. He does recognizing that what they're doing is not enough, and he's saying so.
Well, so in other words, see, I didn't watch it. Perhaps you did. Amber's comment on this was that he voted against the month extension and that they had the votes for the month extension. You don't think they did, I guess, is what you're saying.
Didn't.
Okay. I have no idea. You're the person on the scene, so after you and Amber can duke it out or whatever. I don't know.
No. I have no interest in duking
it out
with anyone.
I know. It's just an expression.
And before we have any further discussion on this, let's get our facts straight.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree.
I really don't want to misrepresent.
No, I understand.
Okay.
What else do you think is happening in Berkeley that I should pass on, or you can pass on?
Well, they just did a little coverage on the radio about they opened their stairs center. They opened the little area near the city dump where they've put up some RV offices, ironically enough, and they have showers and little. I guess they're sort of like tent places for people to stay. Now, I haven't been down there, but they have room for about 45 people, which, of course, is only a small portion of the group. We have about 1,000 people in Berkeley, more or less, after the last count. And so 45 people, they filled up, they opened their stair center, and it filled up in 3 days. And they say they found permanent housing for 5 people so far, and that's the idea, to have a place where people can, safe and store belongings, mm-hmm. and also be connected with actual housing.
Permanent housing in Fresno, or where permanent housing?
That's
where?
Here's to you. Excellent question, because my suspicion is that 100% of that housing is outside of Berkeley. But we'll see. Let's try to find out, because that is exactly the most important question. I think what I have seen and what some of my friends have experienced who spent years, you know, tenting around town and finally found housing is they found housing in East Oakland or in Hayward or in the communities going further south towards San Jose.
You may remember, Carol, that we were both at the UN rapporteur's discussion with the first that came for the homeless encampment when they were still at City Hall.
Yes.
Some months back. Was there any, did you check any, see any response from the UN, any report that came out on that?
Mm-hmm. There is a report that came out on that, which I don't have and have not read, but I would imagine that's available online and or gettable by writing to the UN. And they said, you know, someone who had read it, it may have been Amber, referenced it this last Tuesday in front of the city council and said that one of the things they made a huge issue about were, one of my favorite subjects, is the absence of bathroom resources for people who are on the street and the way there are bathrooms all over Berkeley, by the way, but they're locked up tight. The hours are so different everywhere. There's no one set of times or time that applies to the bathroom, so that your knowledge has to be very specific to each and every location, which, you know, always invites the comedy out of me. And I am kicking around ideas for an art show we're putting together about, I guess, the issue of the lack of housing and what it's doing to people's lives. But one of the things I was thinking of doing was a declaration of defecation that everybody could sign, like the Declaration of Independence, you know, that when in the course of human events, and basically make it about the inevitable need for people to relieve themselves and a place for people to... I'm trying to figure out things that we can do that are participatory. But somebody did note that the UN report now out that does reference Berkeley as a place that pats itself on the back about how nice it is to people with nowhere to go, noted that the available bathrooms were a nightmare to use. They were a nightmare in every revolting way one can imagine. So, yes, that report does exist.
Now, you've also been checking out the local downtown association, whatever they call themselves in Berkeley. Here in Santa Cruz, they're planning to bring back the hosts, or the pests, as we call them.
You mean they were gone?
They've been gone for a couple of years. Instead, they used security patrols from what's called First Alarm. We call them First Attack or First Assault.
Wait, so tell me the difference.
Well, First Alarm are the hosts are supposed to greet people coming into town like your greeters or ambassadors, whereas the First Alarm is supposed to invite people of the rules about what is a civilized behavior. You shan't sit within...
That's so welcoming.
That sort of thing. 14 feet of a building, 14 feet of a... and so forth. So
are these two competing companies?
Well, I think, I suppose, in a certain sense, one was an out-of-town company that developed a sort of a bad... They were replaced by the First Alarm a couple years ago here in San Diego. Then they were replaced by the Parks and Rec Rangers, who apparently decided that the new place to, you know, engage in growth of, you know, tending the grass was on the cement or something. So the new police chief, Andy Mills, has sort of moved the Parks and Rec under his jurisdiction now. And we don't have so much of a sleeping ban, although it's still there and it's still used somewhat. But we have what's called, they're using trespass sites and other ordinances to criminalize people. Essentially, if you do what the policeman says, whatever he says, you don't get arrested or cited. If you don't, you know, they'll find a law. And I suppose it's probably similar in Berkeley.
Oh, yes, definitely. The law is a piece of paper. The cops do whatever they want, you know. The rules depend on who you are.
Have you? I think you mentioned some about our last call, maybe our last call, that you were successful in dealing with the Downtown Association's latest. Some, I don't know if it was the Downtown Association or one of the other groups that were engaging in some kind of. Was it flyering restrictions? Or,
yeah.
Remind me of that.
So up and down with that one. I successfully got induced the Berkeley City Attorney to scold them over their removal of flyers on First Amendment grounds. And that was a couple of years ago. And then I went up only a couple of months ago and found they were still doing it and had no recognition of the fact that they had ever been scolded. Took a couple of the flyers out of the arms of the people who had torn them down, photographed this whole thing, and then just, you know, went to the gym, which is why I was down there anyway, and then went down to the DBA's office, and they were just like, John Koehner, who's the DBA CEO, was freaked out that I just came in. So he thinks of me as, I know people think of me as this hair on fire radical, but I just came in and sat down and said, I really need to get to the bottom of this. It seems like the letter from the city attorney didn't seem to make any difference. And I learned a lot by doing that because John Koehner came out. First I was introduced to the woman who was apparently, she was wrapping up, she was either the woman about to be in charge of a new company of green shirts. I just call them the green shirts. I don't know what to call them. Because they got their beautification crew, their hospitality crew. They probably got their eat the homeless crew. You know, I can't tell them all the crews apart, but basically they run around town tearing down posters, and they're not supposed to. And she goes, well, no, I don't know anything about this. So I told her the story, and John Koehner finally, is John Koehner here? I say, and she goes, yeah, he's right around that corner. So he pops his head out. He's listening to us the whole time. But he's scared of me, I guess. And he came out and he goes, well, of course, yes, we take them down unless they're a nonprofit and unless, and he had this whole convoluted content-based selection idea. And I just said, what you've just described is wholly unconstitutional. You can't make content-based decisions about what you're seeing. It all, in any area where you can post anything the city can post, anybody else gets to post too. And he just kind of looked at me blankly, and I said, well, dang, I guess we have to get the city manager involved again. You don't seem to have a grasp of First Amendment rights for other than the city. And the First Amendment was designed for people like me. And he's just looking at me like, get this toad out of my office. So I thought, okay, then. I wrote some piece about it, of course. And then what was interesting, though, was they were in the process of switching companies but keeping the same employees. Now, as you, I know, remember, and I hope many of your listeners will as well, we had two of our Berkeley green shirts just haul off and beat up a couple of homeless guys. This was a couple of years ago.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah, so those civil court cases are going through the courts, and hopefully that'll be a small pile of money for the young men who were beaten up. But that, I guess the people who were directly a part of the green shirts both lost their jobs, but the training is the issue that I have, the training that enables them to think that only the city has the right to post posters and flyers and artwork and so forth is the same. The training that allows them to see anyone who doesn't seem to fit the student profile or the shopping with a credit card profile as a threat or someone who is about to commit a crime, that's still going on. And I feel very strongly that my work, the work of the people I work with and mine, is not done until our merchant association has oversight, at least the oversight of the Police Review Commission, because they're operating as if they're police. So I look over to the Police Review Commission, and of course, here in Berkeley, they're in complete disarray. They have, like, I'm not even sure what happened on Tuesday, but one of the other things on the agenda was this opportunity to have a charter amendment on the next ballot for the city of Berkeley to change up the organization of the PRC, and I don't even know if that passed. I started to back away from the effort when I saw that there were two competing charter amendments, and I couldn't get either group to give me a definition real neatly of what the difference was between the two. And I thought, this is a really bad sign, this is a bad omen, this is not the year for an increase or an improvement to police accountability, because there is no point in putting two competing ballot measures on the ballot.
Usually that's done because one of them is stronger and the other one is an attempt to weaken the first.
Exactly. It will look suspicious even if it's not.
Now,
I tried to talk to the one guy. One guy is just this rich guy in the hills who's kind of a maverick, and he styles himself as, like, I don't work with anybody. I just get a good idea, and everybody flocks behind me, and I'm just going to do this thing. He may have something on the ballot. He says he was close to having enough signatures.
Have you talked to Andrea Pritchard about this? She's on the Police Review Commission.
Right. She was part of the group that was organized for the other measure, the competing measure, and was very disappointed in this guy, whose name I have conveniently forgotten. And they had nothing nice to say about him, and he had nothing nice to say about them.
But did she have a substantive sense of what the difference between her measure and his was?
I didn't talk to her about it. I talked to the head of, like, one of the PRC members is George Lippman, and he just seemed to be in despair over the improbability of getting enough signatures. And I thought, well, yeah, especially if, in a small town, well, it's a relatively small town, city of Berkeley, what, 200,000, something like that. Most people, if they sign it once and it says PRC anything, they're going to think they've signed it. So you've had two competing signature-gathering PRC improvement measures. Nobody's going to know what they signed.
Well, the next time I talk to you, if you learn more, we'll learn more about that. I'm going to have to cut it off, but give you the last word as I am right now.
Okay. Well, the other thing that's happening is we're about to unveil our downtown BART clause, and you won't believe one of the things they're proposing that they may have already passed is something I know they learned from Santa Cruz, these, like, 3x3 spots where you can get permission to be and art around. Like, what do they call them in Santa Cruz?
I call them performance pens.
Performance pens. I think we're about to get those, and I can't wait for mine. I'm really looking forward to my performance pen.
Well, I hope we can get some video of you performing in the pen, maybe even then going to the bigger pen as a consequence of being out of the pen. And
yeah, I think we should all urinate in our pen.
Uh-oh. You know, bring your chamber pot with you.
The DPA refused to put a bathroom in the whole renovation. And
oh, boy.
So I want to go up and just put up big signs in the places where I know they're not allowed to tear them down and say, by the way, nice renovation. By the way, where's the bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
And then direct, have a little map directing them to the DBA's own lonely bathroom.
Very good. You know, we were thinking of doing the same thing with the city staff because they have closed the Loudoun Nelson Center bathrooms, put up a fence around the park, and are now declaring unattended property a basis for exclusion from the park, if not criminal activity in terms of an infraction citation. So we're having a protest, or we're doing some documentary tabling to find out how people feel about this, to see if there's a discriminatory treatment of
good
people
idea.
Coming in to, that, you know, they, you're allowed to use the bathroom if you're part of a program. That's the new kind of criteria. So we'll see.
That's
if
the human being program.
No. There are
that's
no such thing.
That's the program I'm part of.
That's history, Carol. Come on. Anyway, we've been talking with Carol Denny, musician, scholar, writer, who knows what else. If you want to catch her music, you can find it at
CarolDenny.com, yeah.
D-E-N-N-E-Y, that's Carol
yes.
Denny. Yeah.
Come on up to the Laborfest ferry boat tour this Sunday, where we'll be, the boat leaves at 6 p.m. them, and we float around the band and just sing labor songs and listen to historians talk about labor history. It's really fun.
How much?
Oh, it's about $45.
Ah!
Well, with food,
uh-huh.
And there's a full bar. I mean, it's a really nice ferry boat, all union labor, and it's a great thing.
No homeless scholarships, I suppose.
Musician scholarships.
That's good.
That's good.
Homeless musician scholarships, perhaps?
Well, I can't speak for the organizers.
I got you.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you luck on your tour.
We'll sleep for free on the docks for about an hour before that.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
All right. At what time does it begin?
We'll start playing about 5.
And the location is?
It's 6, and it's
location?
Here, between Pier 43 and Pier 39. There's a boat that's going to sneak in there and pick us up.
43 and 49, did I catch that right or not?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Carol. And again, check out Carol at caroldenny.com and listen and read the Pepper Spray Times. And she's very salty. Thank you,
nice
Carol.
Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, same here.
Bye-bye. Enjoy your day.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, why am I so high to die? I'm meeting with a Russian spy. I'm meeting with a Russian spy. Oh, why am I on fire to die? I'm meeting with a Russian spy. I'm meeting with a Russian spy. He's listening in somewhere above the... It's late, I'm in, it must be love. And now I style in Berberai. I'm meeting with a Russian spy, I'm meeting with a Russian spy. He's tall, I'm told, and oh so shy. I'm meeting with a Russian spy, I'm meeting with a Russian spy. I bought new shoes, I baked a pie. I'm meeting with a Russian spy, I'm meeting with a Russian spy. I bought new shoes, I baked a pie. I'm meeting with a Russian spy, I'm meeting with a Russian spy. The accent so attractive to its code, I know, for love that's true. So strap me down, I cannot lie. I'm meeting with a Russian spy, I'm meeting with a Russian spy. A life alone, a travesty. I'm meeting with a Russian spy, I'm meeting with a Russian spy. He's trained for years and hides so well. Is he here now? I cannot tell. His sign, of course, is Gemini. His Valentine's Day address, I. He's bad, I know, but he's my guy. I'm meeting with a Russian spy. I'm meeting with a Russian spy. So let's drink to love with bourbon. I'm meeting with a Russian spy, I'm meeting with a Russian spy, I'm meeting with a Russian spy, I'm meeting with a Russian spy. Now, I believe that song would have brought...
And that was I'm Meeting with a Russian Spy. I thought it might be a little different. I'd never heard that before, and I'll probably never listen to it again, but... interesting thing is, you heard some sounds in the background, and that was actually ostriches, if you believe it or not. There were caged ostriches behind Carol Denny as she was singing that song, available on YouTube, a bunch of other songs too. I prefer the more political songs, and I try to get them, but sometimes I don't. So, you got that one today. Now let's turn to some interviews from the Red Church, because that gives you some actual voices from actual people who don't actually get too much airtime, and that's really their lives, and what they're facing is what this is well, my radio show has mostly been about.
So it's a sunny Monday, and I'm approaching the Red Church about 6 o'clock on July 9th. And I'll see if anybody's around who has anything to say. The musicians here. What's your name again?
Hi, this is Cooper.
Cooper, have you been strumming and singing and playing? And
yes, I actually got a ticket the other day on Pacific Avenue, and the ranger said I was singing too long in that same box.
You know, you should know better than to sing
too
long.
I know. You know, if I've been singing too long in one place, maybe I should go to Europe and sing.
Yeah,
maybe,
I think they don't.
That was a sign that I've been singing too long in one place. I mean, I got a ticket as a sign. I mean, and I got tipped and tipped while he's ticketing me. I couldn't even be mad. It was kind of funny.
Any eggs thrown at the ticketer?
Huh?
You know, rotten eggs.
Yeah, there was a whole crowd. Poor guy.
What time of day and night was it?
What time was it? 5 or 6 in the evening.
Yeah.
In front of the Palomar, but, you know, down on the sidewalk.
Did you say there'd been a complaint?
No, actually, I was singing there first with Christo. Then I went upstairs to a veterans meeting, came back down and sang with Ricardo, and the ranger said, I'm giving you a ticket. You've been here over an hour, but I really hadn't.
I've been upstairs. He was trying to do his job.
I know, and then when we got tipped while he was ticketing us, I thought, this has got to be a scene set up from God. It's too weird.
How much tip did you get?
I don't know, like $15.
So you got to arrange in the future with the rangers to come by and do this.
Yes.
And split the tape.
We should do that. I love you. See, and then it's a win-win. We love win-wins.
Except the ticket costs $220.
Maybe we should donate the money to them so that way we won't get the tickets.
Yeah, they used to have it in New York a lot, as I remember.
Yeah, well, you know, we just obey the ticket and just sing somewhere else. Maybe we'll go to Europe.
As you suggested. Anything else happened downtown you've noticed?
Well, you know, I think the revolution's about to start, so the squeeze is getting...
It was in the paper the other day about the bathroom situation at Lyle Nelson, though.
That one is continuing abuse, to say the least.
Yes, and that we witnessed a girl going in asking to use the bathroom and was denied, and she came out to the grass and couldn't hold it and peed on the grass. And right away, the ranger went to her with his ticket book and had his fingers shaking in her face and called 911.
Offer some TP to wipe herself?
Called 911. 6 cops arrived. I mean, a motorcycle, a cop SUV, and a cop car for a girl.
Too careful with these pissers, man.
Yes, I know. It is huge crime. I mean, that's hardcore crime when you pee. I mean, 6 cops. And they took her to jail. And, you know, the real of that is she'll end up with some kind of a sex crime, right? Isn't that... Right. And see...
Do we know her name, by any way?
Loud Nelson, no.
They really... They wrote an article about it.
They really spent some time beating up on her. And it's too bad, you know? That's the way they are treating women. And... I don't know...
How's the bathroom situation downtown these days?
Well, the other one on Laurel Street's closed. It was closed since this afternoon.
Really? And do you know why was it in the garage or the porta potty?
The garage. The one on Laurel Street.
Do you know why it's closed? Does it say?
No, I didn't use it. I just seen that it's closed.
It could be that Santa Cruz is like the most expensive toilet to live in.
It is.
Oh, my God.
Flush it away, man. Flush it away.
It needs the giant flush. Huh? I think it's coming. I think it's coming. This could be the baptism of the West Coast.
By Laurel, you mean Laurel in front, right?
Yeah.
And we've been listening to the complaints, comments.
This is Cooper D'Angelo.
And Super Guy.
Yeah, he's
Superman.
He's got an S on his chest. Thank you.
Love Muscle. He's my roadie named Bart.
Thank you.
And I like your shirt,
for
too,
free
by the way. I like your shirt
thank you.
A lot. And thank you.
You know,
we know you're out here volunteering.
I'm sorry. I missed what you said.
Oh, no, it's all right. It's all right.
We'll get out there and get some reports. I mean, how am I going to make the grade? But, thank you.
So a young male finds himself in law enforcement based predicament. Young male completely aces policy background check.
Talking about you or someone you know?
Myself.
All right.
And essentially gets deemed wittable and knowledgeable enough to be let go on simply a citation by said officer.
The name of the officer was?
I remember. I do not remember his name. I do know that Officer 445, badge number 445, she made a very, very hard claim and made a very hard bargain and, you know, drove a hard, hard...
Did he trick it to you?
No, no, she didn't.
Well, why did she approach you for it?
Ultimately, for obstructing her duty and being in a place that wasn't.
Were you obstructing her duty?
You know, I can't say so myself. I don't believe so. But I typically believe that the profiling and the inequity in that is just, you know, basis. So ultimately, I'm glad that I got to.
What was her pretext? What did she ask you about?
I think her pretense was ultimately just that she had asked me to not be there before previously.
Not be where?
Of course.
Is this a secret place? Can I?
No, no. Very public, very public. You know, most people go there often. So it's not like people don't
where
know.
Where was it?
Oh, right here at Pergolesi's. Old Pergolesi's.
She didn't like you being at Pergolesi's?
No, she did not. They didn't appreciate it because apparently of all the, you know, kids that hang out there nightly. But it builds character for us, you know. It helps us find out who our friends are and, you know, separates people that want to help versus the people that just want to do for themselves.
And we've been speaking with?
Louis Ugarte.
Thank you, Louis.
Thank you.
You have, say it again.
I avoid confrontation.
Why not? A good idea.
No complaints.
Feel free to not complain if you wish.
Not one complaint.
All right. Any reports from the street?
No news, good news.
No news. What about you, sir? Any complaints, ideas, thoughts? Feelings, ponderings, musings.
Nothing new, I don't think.
Fair enough. Anything you want to report for free radio? No. Okay.
Well, what did you find out about the bathroom stuff?
Oh, well, there's some news about it. I'm going to be announcing it here. Nothing about the Loudon Nelson. They're still keeping them locked up, except to the right people.
All right.
However, the San Lorenzo bathrooms reportedly are open today.
I have Loudon Nelson's a theft. I think they just stole fucking Loudon Nelson.
I think you're right. I agree.
No, never mind. I don't want that on the radio.
All right, let's keep it off the radio. Right? Well,
with those lousy bathrooms they got.
Any headway?
Instead of hiding those,
fair enough. Thank you, sir.
Any headway on the metro thing with trying to keep that open later?
We're having a meeting on Wednesday to plot our next steps, but the answer so far is nothing that I've heard.
Right. That's so unfair.
Well said.
Especially for women.
I agree.
Dangerous. Women that have got to wait and go on the 11:45 bus and the bathroom closed at 10 o'clock.
At the Metro Center.
And then what? They have to go to the bathroom. They're going to
go wee-wee on the grass and then get six policemen to come and talk to them.
Right. Or have somebody attack them because they're out in the dark trying to go to the bathroom pulling down their pants. So it's just, that's something that really needs, the safety issue really needs to be brought up.
Icky situation.
Yeah.
We've been talking with?
Person.
Ryan. Person, as I remember.
Yeah, person.
Thank you, person. And what about you, Sonny? Any thoughts? Nice T-shirt.
Thank you.
Nothing new happening?
Not yet.
Are you in the River Street campground or not now?
Nope.
Are you being harassed outside the campground?
I'm not allowed over there.
Why not?
Chris kicked me out. He thought it was the best thing.
Did he say why, if you wish to say?
My marijuana pipe.
Well, I mean, marijuana is now legal in this...
And thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
But it's not allowed in a cage.
Well said. And anything happened to you outside you want to comment on? We've been talking with...
Sonny.
Thank you, Sonny. Any reports from the street?
Well, I recently acquired a ukulele, and I've been copying the Bible. I'm almost through. Well, I just started Abram.
First musical based on the Bible. This could be a whole revolutionary thing.
No. It's just for prose. You know, the prose, the verbiage. You know, the verse. It's very beautiful. There's brevity, the utterances. It's a great use of pronouns. Breathtaking use of pronouns.
Have the police been helping you in your effort?
For any of my guitars, no. I recently found a ukulele. That was good.
So your cars are still in the lockup?
I think so.
That's a bummer. We've been talking with, if you wish to say.
Ma.
Your name is?
Oh, Eric Villasenor.
Thank you, sir.
Street Madam?
Street Reports. Michael can't go to that movie with Valerie.
What's this?
There's a special showing at the Del Mar, something about Yellow Submarine. But our wonderful, playful, creative Michael can't go.
And why is that? As if I cared, or anybody else cared.
Because he has a music date at the same time, 7 p.m. on a
corner. This is going to be broadcast on Thursday. Does anybody give a shit about that?
Oh. What's happening on the street that's going to last till Thursday? I didn't get anything. I talked to Jim Weller, Lee, and Michael.
Okay. Well, if you do, rush over and film it. Okay. We've been listening to the non-thoughts of...
Lighthouse Linda.
Thank you, Linda.
For the 7-Eleven.
When was that theft happening?
That's been happening all the time at 7-Eleven.
And when did your truck get taken?
3 days ago.
Really?
Yeah.
And what were the, if you want, what were the circumstances?
I had a flat tire, that's it.
So 7-Eleven towed you?
No. 7-Eleven was responsible for the contact to the phony police officers.
Gotcha.
The pirates.
They're pirates. They're not even officers.
No. They took his truck, but I was wondering why they took his truck, because it wasn't his attitude. I was there that night.
Yeah, it was nice to him. All very nice to him.
Yeah, he got nasty, and he said, well, you're going to die. Because it was a done deal. You was going in.
He did die.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
And we've been talking with...
What?
Your name again for...
Michael.
The...
Moses.
Sorry, Michael.
You
Moses,
call me Michael.
Know.
Okay, you
I
know.
I do, but, you know...
Just call me what you always call me.
Well...
And when I just don't call me an asshole, because I'm not an asshole.
Not late for supper.
All you guys call me assholes.
Okay? I won't call you an asshole at this point.
You never have.
Yeah, I don't think I will. Any reports?
No.
My wife called me an asshole, but she had. That's when I was getting too close to her. I had bad breath.
Well, you know, that can happen.
I was playing that song when I was 10 years old.
There you go.
I'm 65.
Well, you know, it comes around. You know. Any reports from the street? No, it's out there. All right. Excuse me, madam. Let's see, searching for a burger in the trash again.
Something for the dog.
Something for the doggy.
Look at us.
All right. All right, so any reports, Susan, that you wish to... I see the doggy is waiting for a bite to eat. You have your two doggies with you. Oh, I'll let you continue scavenging.
Major report right now is...
No problem. Any reports?
He shouldn't be allowed to appoint anybody on the street.
All right.
Report.
Any street reports? No? Any reports from the street or from around the street?
Right now it seems calm and peaceful to me. I don't know what's going on other places. I don't know. I mean, I kind of go in small circles and I don't see a lot of what's going on.
Fair enough. We've been speaking with
Harriet.
Of course. Thank you, Harriet.
Thank you. God bless.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to review this because my machine just went buka buka. But now it's on, and we're talking with...
Steve.
Steve, you're saying you're concerned about the Costco management and harassment of people who are peacefully...
Not just harassment, but actual, I don't know what you call it, perjury in a way? I'm not sure what the legal term would be.
Well,
but here's
happening.
What it is. Observed him twice. If he sees someone, a homeless person, walking through the lot, panhandling, whether they're panhandling or not, this manager, he'll go approach them and say, you look like the one that did siphon gas, or you look like the one that stole a purse. And I believe what he's doing is that's what he'll tell the police if he wants to, you know, have them locked up, you know. And the reason I know this for sure, I observed him do it to two people, siphoning gas, he said. You look like the one's been siphoning gas. If I see you on the property again, I'm going to have you arrested. The other day, I happened to walk by, and I was broke and hungry, and I was on the sidewalk, which is public property, around Costco. Two people were coming out, and I said to them, "Would you be able to help? I'm kind of hungry, I don't have any money." That's all I said to them. They smiled, said, "Sure." Rich reached in their grocery cart, shopping cart, and handed me a chicken, you know, a whole baked chicken.
Wow.
"Wonderful," I said to them. "Good, I'll take this back to the park and share it with folks," which I did. But as I'm walking on the sidewalk, this same manager...
Do we know his name?
No, he doesn't wear a name.
What does he look like?
He's tall, a shaved head, glasses. Has a little phone. So he comes up to me, and he goes, to me, same thing he said to the other people, "You look like the one that's been siphoning gas. If I see you on this property again, I'm going to have you arrested."
You mean the sidewalk, mister?
Yeah, and I said, this is a public sidewalk. And he goes, "Oh, you're getting smart with me, huh? I'm going to handcuff you and arrest you myself," he said. He's not an officer, he's a manager there, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm trying to warn people that I believe...
Did he do that?
Huh? Did he do it?
Yes.
No, he didn't do it. I stood up to him. I said, "This is a public sidewalk. You have no right to talk to me at all."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "If a customer wants to give something of their own free will to me to share, to eat, somebody's hungry, that's up to them. That shouldn't be up to you. They bought it there from Costco. It's up to them if they want to give it away."
Working man coming through. To which he replied.
But the issue here is, I want to like to warn people, because I've seen something I haven't seen before. Now, police now. He's calling police on people just for cutting... We're cutting across, you know, people cut across the Costco parking lot to get to Coral Street or back to the park. And what he's doing now, he's calling the police on them for doing that, profiling them, labeling them homeless, dehumanizing them, saying they're siphoning gas. I never siphoned gas in my life.
So we need to video this guy doing it and then go up to him and say, "If this happens again, aren't you the guy who's been doing perjury on people?" I think you are that guy.
You know, you would think I'm 65. If I was siphoning gas, I'd have an M.O. You know, there'd be some record of it. I don't do such a thing. I don't have a car.
You look like a gas siphoner to me from way back.
Anyway, he also threatened a little violence. He said, "I should come on back over here," you know, like he wanted to fight or something. And this is a manager at Costco. So I don't have the, you know...
Did you throw the chicken at him?
Right, or organize a protest. I would like to, so the customers know what they do there. And it's really this one manager. You know, a lot of homeless people go in there and get a hot dog once in a while or something. But and I think if he doesn't want people panhandling on the property, maybe put up a sign. But he's actually threatening with physical violence. And he's making up, I think he's probably telling the police that this looks like a guy that did X, Y, or Z. So the police will, you know, book the guy or, you know.
Well, I will bring this up if I don't, at the Huff meeting, which will be coming up Wednesday, day after tomorrow. And we'll see if anybody wants to. We were thinking of doing some tabling at Loud and Nelson around the closed bathrooms, but this also sounds like a possible place to do some tabling. Possibly someone with video capability.
Yeah.
And even phones with not very great video capability are able to, you know, you can always whip out your video and hold it up to the guy and say, "Why don't you say that again for our cameras?" You know, I
mean, I'm afraid to do that. This guy looked the way he talked to me like he would actually smash it and beat me up. That's the way he basically threatened it.
He's got to have a couple people together.
He used some language that was basically, "Come on over here and I'll kick your ass" kind of language.
I see.
Basically, the reason I'm doing this primarily is to warn people, because a lot of us do occasionally walk right across the lot.
Gotcha.
It's a long walk to the park and back, and occasionally panhandle it, and nicely.
And this warning will go out on Thursday.
Yeah, I'd panhandle a couple times there, and people...
So if anybody has had this experience, give me a call. Unless you want them to call you, Steve.
No, I'm concerned. I hope there's nobody in jail facing siphoning or whatever, purse-snatching charges just because this guy makes that up to get rid of homeless people. That's my primary concern. So if anybody out there...
You've got to be inside on the sidewalk. Can you be inside?
No. Wait here. Linda, wait here. Don't be bullied by this guy.
If anybody is facing such a Trump, a made-up charge like that, siphoning or purse snatch.
And what was happening here was Steve, the Cavalry Church bouncer, as I call him, or Uberführer Steve, as I sometimes refer to him, he walks around the property telling people they can't stand on the path, they can't be outside on the property. He also stands at the door and... People try to take food out. He stops them. He's tried to get me to move along when I was interviewing someone. I've told him to move on himself, or, you know, maybe he wants to be interviewed. I don't know. But any case, I continue this interview. This is Steve, the cavalry church bouncer, not Steve, the guy I'm interviewing, who is a homeless guy, previously active in Huff, who lives in his vehicle and has been facing some harassment, he and his partner, Michelle. In any case, let's hear some more from Steve, the vehicle guy. Steve, who's exposing, apparently, Costco bullying.
When they were just crossing the lot at Costco, call me, Steve. It's 831-419-0823.
Say it again.
Steve at 831-419-0823.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
All right.
Or if you don't want to get Steve or you can't get through to him, call Huff, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Linda, you're still standing on the property. Now, you're not allowed to stand here. What are you doing standing?
You're the fifth person to throw me out of here, and you brought me here.
It's my fault. I see. Blame it on the Robert. I know. All right. Thank you, Steve. We were talking with
Steve.
Thank you, Steve. And it's now about 10 to 7. I'm at the San Lorenzo Park. Hour is sunrise to sunset. And the sun is still high in the sky. So the park is still open. Sign says, please be a responsible park user. Bicycle riding on levee path only. Which I guess means you can't ride a bike on any of the other paths. No camping, smoking, alcohol, or gas containers permitted in the park. No dogs allowed in the park. No bikes on lawn, planted areas, or shrubs, and use bike racks. So I'm going to determine if it's true what I heard earlier today, that the San Lorenzo Park bathrooms, long closed, have been opened. You may have heard that earlier in this interview, series of interviews from Steve Plaich, assuming I got an interview from Steve Plaich. I'm doing a little problem with my recording capabilities. It's a 1964 park, according to the placard that is at the sort of the opening of the park here. And I'm checking out the men's bathroom, see if it's actually available. It's up. No shaving, bathing, or laundering in this restroom. Alcohol, littering, dogs, camping prohibited in San Lorenzo Park. And no, I'm afraid bathroom is locked. So apparently the bathrooms are not open. So looks like a false dawn over here. That's the men's room anyway. The women's room is also, looks like it's locked. Let's see if we have any reports from nearby campers. Talking with Stephen, you're kind of sitting comfortably with guitar by your side in San Lorenzo Park, kind of not too far away from the bathroom structure, and you say that you were able to use the bathroom today?
I was, for the first time I've ever seen.
And you say that it was okay except there was a missing sink?
Yeah, there was no sink at all. No running water at this park at all for anybody to drink or wash their hands with or anything.
Now, what about in the women's room? I believe your compatriot here, you were able to use the women's room?
Yes, I was.
And was there a sink? Was it did it have water that was running?
Yes, there is a sink in there.
So you have to simply put on a wig and, you know,
pretty much.
You know, dress up.
Yeah.
Anything else about the women's bathroom you want to comment on? How was it?
It was nice to see it open after a year or so.
And you've been aware that it's been closed for a year?
Yes. I've been here for over 2 years, and when they closed it, it was 1 year to the day that it finally opened up.
Wow. And do you remember why they closed it before?
Because of the drug activities in there and people gathering and not leaving and not letting people come in and stuff like that.
Did you find that was a problem for you?
No.
Did you think it was a legitimate excuse or more of an excuse to close?
Just an excuse to close.
And was it kind of about the same time that the San Lorenzo campground opened up?
No.
It was before or after?
It was the camp was after. It was closed already. The restroom was closed already before the camp.
And Any other thoughts you want to pass on? Have you been trying ever tried to use the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms?
The only thing we had problems with is the courthouse. They wouldn't let you go in the courthouse. If they knew you were homeless, they would not let you go in and use the restroom there.
When was the last time you tried?
They threw me out about a year ago when they closed these restrooms up here at San Lorenzo. Mm-hmm. And I went over there and they told me I couldn't use it.
And have you tried since?
No.
So once burned, twice shy.
Yeah, once they tell me to do something once, I don't do it again.
But now, they've opened up the women's bathroom and the men's bathroom. 8 o'clock until...
Till somebody closes it. I think it's the first alarm comes and closes it.
I guess it's around 7 now, so they closed it an hour ago?
I don't know. I really don't know.
An hour ago.
And we've been talking with...
Rosemary.
Thank you, Rosemary. And anything you want to add to this situation?
I think it's crazy because they don't want people urinating outside. They don't want people, you know, this is a park. It's for everybody, you know. I can understand the no smoking and no drug clause. It's understandable because this is a park for children, you know. Not that I see any kids here ever. But there should be places you can use the restroom instead of, you know, urinating anywhere and getting some weird sex charge, you know. I think it's a little ass backwards, and people do take advantage of it, but I know that, you know, one bad apple ruins the whole barrel type deal.
One bad barrel ruins a lot of the good apple.
Absolutely, yeah, that's true, very true. It's just aggravating. There's nowhere to use the restroom, you know, so.
Have you tried to use the courthouse restroom?
I would never.
Because of the experience of Rosemary?
Because of other people's experiences, yeah.
Have you ever tried to use them?
No.
How long have you been in town?
12 days.
So you're just you're a newcomer?
Newcomer, yes, sir. Yep.
Any hassles at night for sleeping in the park, or do you?
No, I don't sleep in the park. I walk around. I get my energy at night, so daytime is time to relax.
And we've been talking with, if you wish to say,
Stephen Hayes.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you.
The bathroom hours are shorter than the park hours, which means you've got to go wee-wee on the trees if you show up early or late. But I guess it's better than having to do it at high noon. Around half the park is this iron wrought fence, and there's a secondary fence around the children's playground. It's all pretty much a sort of police state overkill, but not surprising, sadly.
You've got representatives to call your very own, even though you may not know their names. You may not have voted for them, so it ain't your fault, but they're in somebody's pocket just the same. If you're having trouble breathing, near your local city hall, it's the scent of politicians on the run. None of them remember being out of luck or poor, 'cause they're sitting around with rich folks having fun. You gotta push, push, push your politicians. Write them letters, call them on the phone. Without your help, they'll make some bad decisions. It's dangerous to leave them all alone. You've gotta push, push, push your politicians. Help, help, help them see the light. If you don't look sharp, you'll find they've all gone fishing. It's best to never let them out of sight. You give yourself a headache keeping track of what they do, but if you don't, I'll tell you how it goes. Rich people are gonna stuff their pockets full of dough and then turn around and lead them by the nose. They probably got elected with a lot of high ideals, but now they're high on something else again. Having lunch at country clubs with people wearing fancy clothes in places you ain't never getting in. You gotta push, push, push your politicians. Write them letters, call them on the phone. Without your help, they kinda lose ambition. you don't look sharp, you'll find they've all gone fishing. It's best to never let them out of sight. Elected representatives get comfy in the job, so they probably don't remember what it's for. You may not speak the language and you may not know the ropes, but you're the one who really knows the score. Your friendly politicians know the writing's on the wall, but none of them can see it very well. Maybe they won't listen, but be sure to make the call, 'cause no one else is gonna give them hell. You gotta push, push, push your politicians. Write them letters, call them on the phone. Without your help, they can't recall a mission. It's dangerous to leave them all alone. You gotta push, push, push your politicians. Help, help, help them see the light. If you don't look sharp, you'll find they've all gone fishing. Gotta help them figure out what's right. It's best to never let them out of, make them do things we'll be proud of. Best to never let them out of sight.
And that's a Carol Denny song I do like called Push, Push, Push Your Politicians, which I don't think I've ever heard before. And yes, I'm still here. A couple of encouraging stories from the Mercury News from... Let's see. Today's Mercury News. Arrests, DUIs drop after legalization of marijuana after the passage of Proposition 64. Crime report issued by this week by California Attorney General Xavier Becerra found a huge drop in marijuana-related arrests last year, with all such arrests falling by 56% and felony arrests down 74%. Overall, from 2016 to 2017, number of people in California facing possible incarceration, hefty legal fines, and criminal records as a result of cannabis crimes fell by nearly 8,000. Of course, the question is what's happening in Santa Cruz, which is far more relevant, and I don't have any information on that, but perhaps you do. Call me if you do, 423-4833. I don't know if anybody's covering that subject. In all, 6,065 people were busted for marijuana-related crimes last year in California, figure that concluded about 2,000-plus felony arrests. The data, however, shows that people of color are still being disproportionately arrested for cannabis-related offenses, much as they were prior to the Proposition 64 passage. Additionally, if I can find the right story here. Here we go. I think. Non-Hispanic white people accounted for 24% of marijuana felony arrests in 2017, while Hispanic people accounted for 40% of felony arrests, and black people accounted for 21%. And of course, what you need to have are the percentages of those folks in the state, and that's not clear, but it's probably sounds like it's disproportionate. Proposition 64 reduced penalties for just about every crime involving cannabis. Possession with intent to sell was downgraded from a felony to a misdemeanor. Transporting up to an ounce of weed went from a misdemeanor to being fully legal if you're 21 years old or older. However, it's still a felony to sell cannabis or marijuana to, same thing actually, or to repeatedly grow large amounts of marijuana without a license. And that's pretty nasty additional footnote, unfortunately. Now, those who are anti-marijuana say that, well, there's a group called Smart Approaches to Marijuana, headed by a guy called Kevin Sabat. He says there's a much bigger issue, which is driving under the influence and black market marijuana rates, which this statistic does not touch on, but then he doesn't give any statistics that do. Cops remain wary of cannabis-related DUIs, which have yet to be sharply defined. However, marijuana advocates say that overall DUI arrests continued their steady decline in 2017, that's driving under the influence, dropping 5% from the prior year and down 30% since 2012. And that's a story about the arrest DUIs drop after legalization by Brooks Edwards Staggs in the Mercury News, today's Mercury News. And there's another story in the same section, the local news section, which always is usually more interesting than the sort of cookie-cutter national news. Landlord-backed initiative fails to qualify for ballot in Mountain View. Backers say measure would have reformed renter protections, by which they mean squelched, squeezed, and squashed, probably. A controversial initiative that backers say would have restored renter protections in Mountain View failed to qualify for the November ballot. I laugh because it doesn't mean reform, as I mentioned before. Leading proponents eyeing another try in 2020. Laura Schuchel, spokeswoman for Measure 5 Too Costly, that's the name of the measure, said the initiative was within hundreds of the roughly 5,000 signatures from the city's registered voters needed to qualify for the 2018 election. Backers, which include the California Apartment Association, have until mid-November to submit the necessary amount of signatures to qualify for the November 2020 ballot, or they'll have to start the process all over again from scratch. Opponents, including the city's mayor, had argued that the initiative would actually have repealed renter protections and claimed that their efforts to counter the measure was why it failed to collect enough signatures. We really kind of inundated Mountain View with media, said Steve Chandler of the Mountain View Tenants Coalition, referring to newspaper opinion pieces and letters and ads purchased on Google and Facebook. Chandler said efforts of volunteers of the Tenants Coalition, the Mountain View Mobile Home Alliance, and the local chapter of Democratic Socialists of America apparently convinced residents to not sign the petition for the measure, which was titled the Mountain View Homeowner, Renter, and Taxpayer Protection Initiative, and to withdraw signatures they had already submitted. City Clerk Lisa Natuch confirmed Tuesday the city had received 290 signature withdrawal forms. Speaking for myself, it's clear that Mountain View voters were not fooled by the apartment owner's deceptive campaign to place the sneaky repeal on the ballot, Mayor Lenny Siegel said in a statement. I urge the landlords to work with city leaders on both sides of the rent control initiative debate to find permanent solutions to our housing crisis. The initiative included a clause, this is the initiative that didn't make the ballot, trying to repeal a previous rent control measure that actually gave Santa Cruz rent control proponents, I think, a lot of heart when it passed several years ago in Mountain View. But this one that failed states if more than 3% of the city's 15,000-plus rental units are vacant, there would be no limits on rent increases. And since the current vacancy rate is 4.3%, not well above 3%, and has not dipped below 3.9% in the past 3 years, that means the rent control goes bye-bye, and I guess people sort of saw through that, and good for them. That's it for this edition of Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. You got stories, you got thoughts, you got some input, you're interested in free radio, you're interested in Huff, interested in being a part of the movement to reopen the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms, decriminalize homeless people generally, and stop the right-wing riptide in Santa Cruz, give me a call at 423-4833, the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line. Otherwise, I'll just be talking at you again over the radio and over the computer 9:30 next Sunday morning. Thanks for listening.
The end of the minute.
Who are you?
Hi, this is Casey Kasem.
I repeat, who are you?
Soy el pirata, soy el pirata, soy el pirata, pirata, pirata.
Shaboom, ooky-ook, or Papa Oomau-mau.
Hey, you don't even have a license.
Why don't we have a license? Because we don't need one. Because we can't afford one. Because they wouldn't give us one, even if we wanted to follow their rules. In short, because we don't recognize their authority to regulate the airwaves that rightfully belong to us, to you and I. Thanks for listening and for supporting Freak Radio.